Did DePaul end up losing?
Well, Notre Dame scores. DePaul has a miss. And, you know, they foul a guy, put him on the line, whatever, right? They're down 3 points, 18 seconds. Jamie Crockett gets the ball at the top of the key. They're 18 seconds. You should probably take a three or work the ball around for a three to tie again. So he drives the lane. And then he dribbles it off of his foot.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. DePaul being DePaul. So sad.
They're due for a win.
Hmm.
And, you know, they have next on their schedule.
Who do they have next?
Rutgers.
They have Rutgers?
Yes, in Chicago.
In Chicago?
Yep.
When is the game?
Saturday at 1.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing pretty good. Got a win. Nice. Finally. Finally got a win. Up, you know, beat Seton Hall, beat the rival.
Wait. We have to do the introduction.
Oh, that's right.
It's Wednesday, February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day, as we're recording this. And this is Not Half Bad Episode 7, the podcast covering both St. John's and Rutgers basketball. This is one of your hosts, Norman, of Rumble in the Garden on SB Nation. You can find me at ecoastbias on Twitter.
And this is Dave White of On the Banks, the Rutgers blog, and I am at Dave_White. On Twitter. Yeah, Rutgers gets off the schneid last night, finally.
Mm-hmm.
After losing six in a row, they beat Seton Hall. They controlled pretty much the whole game until the end. I know you were watching since I was following your Twitter as I was at the game.
Mm-hmm.
Felt like they controlled the whole game and still couldn't put Seton Hall away. Just they didn't score a field goal in the last 9.5 minutes of that game.
Really?
Yeah, only foul shots. 10 points on free throws.
You know, I have to say that one of the pleasures, my wife has been away this week, and one of the things I've been able to do is watch games and only half watch them. So, you know, I get up and I do the thing that things that people generally do when they watch basketball games. Mm-hmm. You get up to find a snack, you know, you check your Twitter. You look at your email instead of watching it in that intense, immersed way. So I entirely missed a long scoring drought by Rutgers. But judging by the final score, what was the final score?
57-55. It was an offensive show.
Yes.
It was more offensive.
Yeah. You know, Rutgers looked decent early, like they were, you know, playing good, solid basketball, a lot of good defense. What did they how long was it until Seton Hall scored? Was it like 5 minutes, 6 minutes?
Let's see. I have the play-by-play open here because I wanted to make sure I was right. With it was 9.5 minutes
throughout
at the end of the game for Rutgers. Seton Hall scored about 3 minutes and 10 seconds into the game.
Okay, it was only that long, but it was something like a 8-0 or 11-0 that Rutgers jumped out to, right?
Yeah, it was 8-0, and then it was 11-3, and they didn't score again. Seton Hall didn't score again until about 9 minutes into the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, Rutgers played really solid defense for most of the game. And, you know, even with the scoring drop by Rutgers, it should have been a 10-point win, but Seton Hall hit some hands-in-their-face three-pointers in the last 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, the last shot by Fuquan Edwin that he took, you know, I know you don't make that call at the end of the game, but I did think he got a little extra touching. You know, I forget who was defending him, but I do think somebody got him on the arm. Not that I'm saying that they should overturn it.
It was tough to see from where I sat. I just thought it was really good defense.
Mm-hmm.
And he just hit a really tough shot. But and when I watched the highlights, they didn't show that shot because, so I couldn't really tell,
mm-hmm.
but I did see a lot of people talking about it. The South Orange Juice guys were talking about it.
Yeah.
Twitter today.
Amusingly, I tweeted that, and maybe a half hour or so after the game, I was retweeted by Fuquan Edwin, which was like, oh, that's, you know, it's actually kind of weird when you realize that, you know, these guys are also searching for themselves on Twitter and on the social networks. And you kind of feel like you're just talking about these players who are, you know, who aren't necessarily engaged with you. And it's weird to, like, you know, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of weird to think that, you know, there's this guy going, yo, what are they saying about me out there?
Right.
Oh, this Norman guy. He's saying, I got fouled. Yeah, I'm cool with that.
It was pretty cool, actually. I was going through some of the players' Twitters today, and Miles Mack was kind of trash-talking back and forth with Fuquan Edwin today. Awesome. Yeah.
Teammates of Patterson Catholic.
Yeah, Edwin was cursed, I guess, like right after the game was over. You know, like real frustration, and Miles Mack sent the smiley face back. So, you know, a little lightheartedness. Yeah. But yeah, you know, I try when I'm on Twitter and I'm going to talk about the players, I try to use, you know, one of their names. Mm-hmm. So they can't, you know, Twitter search, you know, Miles Mack. I just say Mac or something like that.
Yeah.
Especially if I try not to talk bad about the players, but in a 6-game losing streak, it does get frustrating. So try to be smart about it.
Sure. I mean, I think there's a real difference between being a jerk and just being frustrated. You know, I think you can. I've always been a big believer in real life as well of, you know, when there are things that you don't like and there's nothing you can really do about it. I don't know that there's a really strong purpose in saying, oh, that sucks, you know. I think for me, people who know me know that when I'm not talking about something, for example, there might be a player or two on St. John's who, you know, I just don't mention very often because they're not very good. And it's sort of like, you know, any solutions have to come from the players who can actually do things and do things right. Well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's just respect. I mean, these kids are out there. They're not getting paid.
They're working hard. They're balling. They're working hard.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they're not out there looking to screw up. So,
yeah. They want to win.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I mean, it was – I honestly thought, speaking of players who have frustrated fans, and we kind of talked about it last week, Eli Carter, other than the last 13 seconds, I really thought Carter played his smartest game of the year.
He did. He did seem to be looking for – his teammates and not just trying to jack up shots because they were there.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he took, the 3-pointers he made, I thought were really smart shots. Somebody was saying, I don't know if it was on Twitter or one of the message boards or, you know, comment threads. I'm not really sure which, that at one point Carter actually passed up an open 3-pointer and Rice kind of got on him to shoot the ball, mm-hmm. which is, kind of cool.
Yeah.
Cool to see that his head's in the game. You know, he had the layup, which wasn't the smartest play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you have the game on at that point?
I'm not sure.
13 seconds left. Rutgers
remember that. It was a very Russ Smith-ish kind of moment where
yeah.
You know, you just have to bleed out the clock, and there he is driving, I guess, to throw down the clincher, and he didn't throw down the clincher.
Yeah, he blew it, but his teammate stepped up. Mike Poole, who kind of stepped in front of a bad pass by Brian Oliver and kind of saved him.
Rosedale on the map. Go Mike Poole.
I know you're a big big Mike Poole fan.
Hey, he's Rosedale. I gotta be a fan.
So, yeah, I mean, they played well. Their schedule lightens up here, and, well, DePaul's going to be angry. They're 1-11.
How angry can you get? Seton Hall and DePaul play very different styles of defense. You know, DePaul is trying to speed up opponents, and yeah, one does wonder how Rutgers will play under that against that. One of the things that I thought was good about Rutgers' game is that they did a very good job of, well, at times, of getting the ball to the right person, not just playing the, you know, hot potato fast tossing thing from Mac to Carter to Sears, and then somebody takes a shot that you think, why would you take that shot? There's 20 seconds left in a shot clock. You're driving into 3 guys, and you're not that good kind of shot.
Yeah. I don't know. Rutgers, at the same time, when they play those grinding teams, you know, South Florida, they did it against Georgetown with some success, really does want to speed it up. So I'm interested to see how they do against the DePaul, because DePaul's defense, if they don't turn you over, is...
it's very bad.
I was going to say porous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rutgers can take advantage of that. I think they have the athletes to do that. It's just a matter of focusing on each, you know, offensively, each possession. Because we know Rutgers can turn the ball over, you know, in the blink of an eye and give up a 8-0 run.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's an interesting matchup. It is nowhere near an easy game. I mean, DePaul came to the rec last year and beat Rutgers at the rec. So it's nowhere near an easy game. And I don't think any game is easy for this team at this point. So I don't know. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't have a good feeling, but at the same time, my heart says it's time to win a couple in a row. But what about St. John's? They have Louisville coming up. Are they at the Yum Center?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the other side of the not half bad pairing is St. John's, and St. John's is, yes, traveling to Louisville to play at the KFC Yum Center. It's that whole system and that whole defense that I think is a real worry for St. John's. Yeah, so they have the 9 p.m. game tomorrow. A game that I was hoping to go to, but then ended up that I realized that driving all the way down to Louisville was not, you know, the best idea. I don't really understand what we're going to see tomorrow night. It's very, very possible that the game is going to be a bit like the Syracuse game, where St. John's is going to have some runs, but the system and the talent of Louisville will take over and just run St. John's out of the gym. Or, yeah, there's a game in 2010 where St. John's welcomed in the Louisville Cardinals, who had Edgar Sosa and crew. They came to New York. I believe it was a big snowstorm, and the Cardinals played like they were in a snowstorm. They got slammed, something like 74-55 at Madison Square Garden. And, you know, that's one of those games that shows you that when Patino's system isn't working at full speed, or if the guys aren't, you know, playing full bore, he's not getting that full energy, you can find spots. You can find open spots. You can find flat-footed defenders in the middle of their diamond press. They do have four losses. You don't get four losses just because, you know, just because. You get four losses because, you know, you're not perfect. One loss you can forgive. The second, the third, the fourth, that's when you start questioning how good that team really is.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think St. John's is going to take on Louisville at the exact right time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying they're going to win, but look what DePaul did to Notre Dame tonight after that 5 overtime game. That takes a lot out of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and I know Louisville has a ton of depth, and it'll be 5 days ago at that point, but there's a lot of emotion in a game like that. And, you know, you hear about it over and over and over again. And I think you have to wonder about Louisville's mindset. The last time they lost a close game, it kind of sent them into that 3-game losing streak too. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, even the Louisville fans seem to think that Louisville's not necessarily the toughest team, the team that goes out there and does all the things they need to do every single game. And really, in the recent stretch, except for honestly the Rutgers game, and I guess the Marquette game, they've been playing a lot of close games. They have three of those four losses are one possession losses, and then there was Villanova where I don't know what happened there. So I don't know. Maybe St. John's could have them. Maybe it's hard to say. St. John's doesn't shoot well. Last year they went 5 for 35 in the first half. Which was an insurmountable deficit. They just looked like a team that couldn't figure out how to get open shots. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that anybody who plays Louisville in a close game has a great shot to win, because I don't think Siva and Smith are any good in clutch situations.
Interesting.
When Louisville, I don't think they're any good when they're down in a close game or tied.
Mm-hmm.
If it's coming down to a last possession kind of thing, I think if they're winning, their defense is good enough to force a turnover or something like that. But I think Smith, you know, has that I'll throw anything up, as you saw in the Notre Dame game. I'll throw anything up at any time.
The zone of Russ, where things make sense in the zone, and when you get out of the zone, you go, why would you do that?
Yeah. And I think Siva tries to find the perfect play instead of the good play, and ends up forcing something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I have that marked down for my brackets this year, that Louisville gets in a tough game where they need a a basket late, they're in big trouble. I don't think they're that good. Unless they go to Bohannon, mm-hmm. who I think is an excellent player and can create so much space for himself.
On the other side, though, Rick Pitino is one of those coaches who gets really good performances out of his teams late in the year. He rides them. Things go wrong. Everything seems like it's discombobulated. And then all of a sudden, there's a game where the switch turns on. And things go nuts. And I'm hoping that this isn't the game. But Louisville has a very interestingly favorable schedule before a rematch with Syracuse. They've got St. John's. They've got South Florida on Sunday. They've got Seton Hall a week after that. And then they've got DePaul on the road, which will be the game where they probably will struggle most out of these four. And then they get Syracuse.
St. John's has enough talent that they could hang around.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they are still without Jamal Branch. And really, I think...
Oh, that's true.
I think we're grasping at some straws here. I don't think St. John's is quite ready for, you know, this two-game gauntlet. I think they could show well, and I think that that's a positive. But I do think that they have a long way to go, and they have a really thin margin for error if they're thinking about... as they're thinking about the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think they have a better chance tomorrow than they do against Syracuse.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true. Along with the game, there is also the news today that Steve Lavin won't be coming with the team to Louisville and coaching them. He's in California after the passing of his father, Albert Cap Lavin, who is a prep star and college star at San Francisco, and meant a lot to his son Steve, obviously. So, Lavin's still out there in California, you know, wishes the fans well, or he thanks the fans and friends for the support. But it's good to see him doing the right thing, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It's sports and it's personal.
I know what you're saying, and I know what you're about to say. And I do think that too many times you hear these narratives about these people who, you know, somebody dies and they're, you know, right back playing the next day. You know, whether they have the right mindset or not. And I do wonder sometimes about these people and about their, I don't know, their connection to family.
Yeah, I do too. And the thing that comes to mind is doesn't even hold a candle to Lavin's father actually passing away. But the Manti Te'o thing really struck me as odd.
Yeah.
You know, where his grandmother and his quote-unquote girlfriend die within hours of each other, and he's I better play,
yeah,
you know, kind of thing. And
I think it feeds a narrative of the warrior, but I don't know. I think there should be things that are bigger than sport, even in the big game, and it's just weird to see.
Yeah, I agree. St. John's kind of dealt with this all year last year,
mm-hmm.
so it's not like it's really going to shake them up all that much in terms of game planning and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that there are certainly people who, you know, want to say that not having Lavin changes things, but I think these are their two toughest games, and I think Syracuse would have done much the same to them that you know, either way.
Yeah.
I will say the one thing that was interesting about the Syracuse game, and it was good to have Dan Dokic announcing. I do know that some St. John's fans found him annoying, but I enjoyed having Dan Dokic do the color commentating, because he pointed out a lot of nuanced things that were telling. Less about the, you know, his substitute teacher comments, and more about how D'Angelo Harrison just didn't seem... He was obviously engaged with other things, yelling at some fan on the sideline, etc. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, on a winning team, you think that he's just intense. But on a losing team, you start thinking, son, you have to think about your teammates and think about getting back on defense.
Yeah. I mean, Rutgers fans how many losing seasons in a row has it been? Love to watch that whole body language thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how much it matters in the long run. I think we read a lot into it.
I do think that sometimes on a team that looks, you know, that looks like it's struggling, I think that sort of thing's telling. And, you know, I'm not saying anything bad about D'Angelo necessarily, or his ability to or his ability to stay in the game, but it is something that Lavin has worked on, and you know those might have been a moment where he got benched.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know how, you know, it's not like it's Mike Dunlop who has that kind of experience coaching them. It's some guy I don't even know who is coaching them.
Rico Hines, who is married to Sheena Arnold, who was on Martin. If you remember, Pam, was that her name? The sidekick, Gina's sidekick. Well, he's a former player under Lavin in the early part of the last decade at UCLA, and after that went on to become quite a renowned, or well-known at least, trainer and developmental guy for a number of, you know, his old teammates, and then he was working with the Golden State Warriors and Stephen Curry for a while. So it's not like he doesn't have experience, and I do believe that he's one of the guys who's being groomed to one day be a head coach somewhere if he wants to do it on the college level. But, yeah, he's not, you know, he's not super experienced. He's never been a head coach on any level.
I don't know if that, how much that plays into, you know, benching D'Angelo Harrison and that sort of thing. But I am looking forward to checking out the game tomorrow and watching the Russ Smith, D'Angelo Harrison shoot-off.
Yeah, D'Angelo, I mean, one of the best things that could happen is D'Angelo Harrison and Russ Smith getting into an actual honest-to-goodness shootout, because D'Angelo's been struggling. He's shot 3 for 18 from outside the arc in the last three games, and 4 for 16 inside the arc in that same span. He's really kind of scuffling, and he's not drawing fouls, and he does seem, you know, frustrated.
That sounds very familiar. Haven't we been talking about that with a Rutgers guy for about 3 weeks now?
Yeah, we have, and and it's tough to watch. Yeah. Harrison is also very close to the 1,000-point scoring mark. He's 17 points away.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so that could be on his mind a little if he's aware of his stats.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it'd be awesome for him to see him bust it at the Yum Center with a big game.
Yeah, of course. When I talk about a Russ Smith, D'Angelo Harrison shootout, in my mind, it's both guys just clanking front rim for 40 minutes.
That's because you're cruel.
You need something to talk about.
You don't like good basketball. You've been watching too much Rutgers.
Too much turnovers and grind them out games. I don't like that smooth, solid offensive battle.
Yes, but Tim Pernetti apparently does, because he gave the vote of confidence to Mike Rice. And we all know that the vote of confidence is worth so much.
It's worth absolutely nothing. A vote of confidence is, you know, they call it the dreaded vote of confidence.
You know what it's worth? Everybody, all the neighborhood coaches should start getting their resumes polished and just start slipping them to the right people.
Yeah, I mean, he talked about, I'm trying to look up the article now. It was reported by Adam Zagoria, and it was an exclusive to SNY. Pernetti, it doesn't sound like he's actually giving a vote of confidence. I think it's almost a misleading headline. He says, Pernetti says, I think it was a must win for the, after Seton Hall game. I think it was a must win for the team given the difficulties they've had as of recently and lately. But I think Mike has done a great job with this group this year. Certainly it's still a younger group of kids that are evolving and developing in a tough league. It's still a tough league.
So he didn't even say vote of confidence?
No. You know, we talked about the postseason mandate.
Mm-hmm.
And Pernetti said, I don't know anything about any of that stuff.
Sure.
But then he says, I think you know me well. I'll just read the quotes. I mean, I think you know me well enough to know by now that if it doesn't come out of my mouth, it's very likely not to be true. But I would also tell you, I also would tell you that anything that gets discussed between me and Mike about expectations and where we're looking to go stays between Mike and I, and we'll evaluate it at the end of the year.
Okay.
So, you know, he says the goal is postseason and that sort of thing. So, I don't know. I didn't think it was a vote of confidence. In fact, I think it was a little more damning than that. You know, when you start talking about expectations and we'll talk about it
at the end of the year. The evaluate is never a good sign.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm so torn on if Mike Rice has a bad year this year. what to do. I mean, I don't like firing people to begin with.
I don't think it's a good idea. I think that, you know, teams need continuity, and if you're firing coaches every third, fourth year, you're not building anything.
Yeah, I agree. I think the big worry is if this becomes a Fred Hill-like situation where the team kind of falls on its face and goes, let's say, 4-14, 5-13, and then you have, you know, I've said this before, some transfers out of that big 6-7-man class that came in a couple of years ago. You know, the Miles Mack class. Then you start to worry that there's something more wrong. But if he can keep them together, you know, and kind of maybe get to 7 Big East wins, 8 Big East wins, you can't worry about that stuff.
Do you think they can do it? Can they turn it around?
I think they can. I don't know that that means I think they will. I think a lot kind of rides on how they play on Saturday.
Okay.
If the pressure's off and they play loose and they win, then I think you can see you know, one more upset maybe, and you know, win the games they're supposed to win. So I think they could get to 8. Seven, more likely 7, but
so Rutgers has what, DePaul on Saturday, right?
They have DePaul on Saturday and then Villanova on Monday, both on the road.
Okay, you know, with this schedule, I don't see them getting to 8. I don't think. I mean, they'd have to sweep Seton Hall likely, and then beat some combination of DePaul, Villanova, and Providence because they're at 4 now.
Yeah, they need to win 4 more games.
With what, right, so more than a combination of that, they'd have to defeat really those 4 and just take their L's to Marquette and Georgetown, or knock off one of Marquette and Georgetown and lose to something like Villanova.
Yeah, which I think is actually more likely, just because they still haven't had that big upset at the rack this year, and they really only have one more shot at it. I still don't qualify beating Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was a good win, but I don't qualify that as a big, you know, rack Rutgers style, even in a terrible year, upset.
All right. I think at the end of the year, it'll probably be seen as such. I think Pittsburgh's certainly on the rise, and I think they're, I'm very convinced that if you're not hearing it now, in a few weeks you'll be hearing, Pittsburgh's back, and, you know, Pittsburgh's surging.
Yeah, I agree. I just, maybe I just am hopeful that that's not their big upset of the year.
Yeah, you would like to see something a little better.
Yeah, something a little more exciting. But I don't know. That's why you got, at this point, if they're going to turn it around, Rutgers has to, it's such a cliche, they have to take it one game at a time. One possession at a time.
One possession at a time. One dribble at a time.
Yeah.
One breath at a time.
Right. And really, I don't know. They won a game at Seton Hall and they won by 2. So, yeah. I'm just a fan.
Yeah.
Seton Hall had, you know, 9 players and 3 of them shouldn't be playing this year because of injuries, and they still only won by 2.
I mean, Rutgers has, what, one more year in the Big East, right?
Yeah, next year.
Next year in the Big East. So, you know, there's still time for them to go out with a bang.
There is. And it, you can liken it in terms of Rutgers' athletic success history to Greg Schiano's rise, and, you know, Miami and Virginia Tech leaves, and the next year is Rutgers goes to their bowl, and then in 2005, and then 2006 has their phenomenal, you know, legendary year under Greg Schiano. And you can kind of look at it for Rutgers as that, as next year, you know, Syracuse and Pittsburgh are gone, and it's not the same Big East, and
powerhouses are gone. Yeah,
you know, kind of opens up things a little bit. You know, St. John's will probably be really good next year, and who knows? So, but that's, yeah, the dreaded vote of confidence, and I don't know. I think Prinetti sees potential, and I think he sees Stringer's contract coming off the books in a year. And he might say to himself, you know, if Rice can't get it done this year, maybe I can. He could pull bring in somebody and kind of a return on investment, put some money in on a coach and see what he can get if they can turn it around quick. that way. That's the only thing I think he could be thinking is, I know I got this money coming in 2 years.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll take a risk. Now's the time to take a risk if ever there was one.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know, but I think a lot depends upon how these next 6 games go and the Big East tournament.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about what we just talked about with Prunetti and Rutgers and turning it around and that sort of thing? Get that outsider's view.
No idea. I have no idea. I mean, what Rutgers is doing – Rutgers is just a strange team. I don't – I think it's very hard. I would have expected more from them.
Agreed.
And, you know, that's got to be worrisome. I have no idea what Prunetti will do or wants to do. And I have no idea whether Rutgers can turn it around. What they – you know, right now they're just not very good. And they're not very good after having played, you know, teams that they could beat. So
yeah.
That's a little worrisome. You know, they've still got DePaul and Seton Hall at the end of the year. But right now they're looking like a bottom four kind of team. The kind of team that doesn't do anything particularly well. And I don't know. I don't know. You'd like to see that there's something for that there's something to hang on to. You'd like to see that, you know, they rebound well or something, and they don't. You know, they turn the ball over and they don't force turnovers. So they don't shoot well. They don't really defend that great.
Their defense has gotten a lot better, I think, than the yearly stats, full season stats would say by the eye test. I mean, they played some awful defense in the out-of-conference schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And I think lately they've really turned up the defense side of things, but their offense has just suffered.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I just see, you know, I'm looking at these per-possession numbers and you know, except for, you know, the loss to St. John's, I don't know that they kept any team under 1 point per possession. Well, in Seton Hall, too, because Seton Hall. And I don't know. I mean, that's worrisome. You'd like to see some good performances. You'd like to see the kind of team that's doing one thing well but needs to work on the other. Really, it looks like Rutgers needs to work on everything.
Yeah, I think my big question is watching this team and watching a team that's up 8 at Cincinnati on the road, in there with UConn on the road, plays Notre Dame on the road down to a final possession. Is that the sign of a young team that's getting better and then has this losing streak that hurts their confidence? You know what I mean? That's mm-hmm. that's learning and showing their talent? Or is that just a team that plays over their heads for a half and is just not a good team? And that's what I'm not sure of. Is it a team that's getting better and there are still losses,
mm-hmm.
or is it a team that is, you know, plays over, is able to play over their heads for half? I mean, they even hung with Louisville and Syracuse for a half or almost a half.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that say about this team? Does it just say that they're DePaul, you know, but found
maybe
a couple wins, or are they actually close?
The margin between losing and winning is very thin in a solid league like the Big East. You know, it's not – and really in most of the BCS leagues, it's like that too, where the teams that are on the bottom, it's not that they're the worst team you've ever seen. They're not necessarily all TCUs or, you know, in this case, DePaul or Penn State. But, you know, for a lot of teams, they're okay, but they're just not good enough to win – anywhere, which is almost as bad as being, you know, not okay. Because you're not judged on your efficiency margins. You're not judged on how close you come. You're judged on wins and losses. And if you can't get the wins, if you can't get over the hump, it's the same as if you were getting blown out.
You know what it is as a Rutgers fan, and here's what it is, and to bring it back to St. John's, because I think we talk about the struggling team more than we do about the successful team,
mm-hmm.
is that St. John's this year with a team that's just as young, if not younger than Rutgers, gets their moment and gets better. Villanova gets their moment and gets better, and Rutgers hasn't seemed to get better. What are you thinking now? After Louisville, who's St. John's have?
After Louisville.
Just to wrap things up mm-hmm. a little.
After Louisville, St. John's has South Florida at home. They've got Pittsburgh in the Garden. Providence in the Dunkin' Donuts Center and Notre Dame in South Bend, and then Marquette at home to close the year.
Okay, so you're... And what's their Big East record right now?
7-5.
7-5. You're looking at a 10... Hopefully. Maybe a 10-11 win Big East season, I'm thinking.
You are a very hopeful man.
I think things are coming together for St. John's.
We'll see. I mean, the game tomorrow will probably, you know, if Louisville puts it on St. John's, it's going to be one of those games where people are like, oh, it's not that good. And I think the real test is what happens in those last five. South Florida is the only, you know, quote-unquote guaranteed win, or at least the only game where they'll be favored. And South Florida can still be pesky because they slow things down. Yeah. And St. John's does a lot of their damage in transition. And then, you know, those are four teams that could beat St. John's or could lose to St. John's. You know, Providence is probably key. Notre Dame at home is pretty tough, but seems like this year they're, you know, giving up leads to anybody. So, I don't know.
This was not half bad, which after Rutgers winning, at least I feel a little better calling it that. And I'm Dave White of OnTheBanks.com. You can find me on Twitter at Dave_White.
This is Norman of RumbleInTheGarden.com. You can find me at eCoastBias on Twitter, or you can find our full feed at RumbleSBN on Twitter.